The internet is rife with misinformation, fake and biased news, so-called fact checkers that are nothing more than political activists, Snopes. And then there's Wikipedia. Yes, there are people out there that think Wikipedia is a trustworthy source for information. If you're one of them, we're sorry to say that your bubble is going to be burst today as we welcome Larry Sanger to the show, the co-founder of Wikipedia. Larry has much to say about what's really taking place there, and he provides a vision for how we can overcome this era of false information to build a truly useful and decentralized encyclosphere. This podcast is the top podcast in the world, even more popular than Joe Rogan. I fact-checked it by asking the internet. Some dude said it was true. Now, he may have been stoned off his mind, but we're just going to go with it.
It was me, I confess.
Prepare to hear some factual information on episode number 477 of the Bad Crypto Podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition.
Who's bad?
Crypto podcast, factual information.
We are telling truth because we made it up.
You don't want to change the station.
Because we are going to change the situation.
Facts, truth, more facts, more truth.
Truthy things, things that are kind of true, mostly true, but we're going to say they're true because we believe they're true.
And welcome to the Mostly True Bad Crypto Podcast, episode number 477. I am Joel Tom. I fact checked that.
I am the world's largest holder of Bitcoin. I'm Satoshi. I'm not. That's a lie. I'm Travis, right?
You're still Travis.
Yes.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Great interview with Larry Sanger. You guys are really going to dig this. The dude who has been on the inside and is going to lay out what happened at Wikipedia, a little bit about Everipedia, and his vision for where things are going in the future. And first, we're going to tell you about our sponsor at 1inch, 1inch.exchange. They're DeFi's leading DEX aggregator. So imagine all of the decentralized exchanges out there, and they're sourcing liquidity from all of these top DEXs, including TrustSwap, including Uniswap, and it saves you time and money on your swaps. Basically, 1inch finds the best possible trading paths and splits it among multiple markets. They launched in May 2019 by two white hat hackers at ETH Global's ETH New York Hackathon. They've reached almost $7 billion in overall volume in just over a year. I've used it. It's very cool. You can check it out. Swap on 1inch version 2 today by going to badco.in/1inch. That's badco.in/1inch. I-N-C-H. Like you have an inch to scratch. No, that'd be an itch. I have to fact check that.
They're so modest about their 1inch. So they wouldn't be bragging about it.
You usually don't brag about 1inch, do you?
But here we are bragging about it right now, telling you all about it.
I'm going to brag about this interview because Larry Sanger is one of the smartest dudes that that I know. And he just wants to do right by providing real factual information. He's got a great vision for how to make that happen. And I think we should just get down to it. It's always a thrill to speak with a founder, somebody who has pioneered a technology and a resource that is world renowned. It's even more interesting when that person has moved on from that world renowned source because of serious philosophical disputes with a co-founder. Today, we're talking with Larry Sanger, the person who spearheaded Wikipedia. This was, you know, he named it, he led it its first year, and he formulated much of the original policies. He founded it along with Jimmy Wales, and that was way back in 2001. So this is a Wikipedia is 20 episode of the Bad Crypto Podcast. Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we started it.
Can you believe that? 20 years.
20 years. It actually seems like 20 years, too. It seems like a lifetime ago. Yeah.
Well, so, you know, what was the thought? What was the impetus for creating it, trying to put yourself in the mindset of two decades ago?
Well, Jimmy Wales hired me to do it. Basically, it was my full-time job to start a free encyclopedia for Bomas. So Bomas Inc. Was the company behind Bomas.com, which was one of the bigger web ring portals of the late 1990s, back when there were such things.
No, don't bomb us.
No, he said Obama's.
Oh.
No, he didn't say that either, right?
Yeah. So basically, the idea was that we wanted to do four encyclopedias what basically the open source software principles did for Linux, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you crowdsource an encyclopedia? How do you get a whole bunch of people from all around the world working asynchronously, you know, at different times to volunteer their valuable time to build an encyclopedia? So that was basically the problem I was given to solve. It's just the job essentially just fell in my lap. Because I was seeking Jimmy Wales out, who is an acquaintance at the time, and among many others, for advice on a startup that I was thinking of doing. And he said, don't work on that. Come to work on this. And the whole idea of starting actually being responsible for not just editing, but starting an encyclopedia was really exciting to me.
Yeah. How did you guys get into that when you said, hey, we're going to create this thing? It's going to be, everybody's going to donate their time for free, and we're going to make no revenue. We're not going to charge anything. We're not going to do any advertising. We're going to make no money. It's genius. Like, how does that turn into a business model?
Yeah, that's a good question. I recall one of the first conversations we had. And so the short answer is, we're going to look like a nonprofit in the beginning. And then slowly, as more and more people get to use it and they get to like it, we will slowly introduce ads, and it will be ad driven. And I was worried about that. I actually thought that, okay, well, if you start doing that, then all these people who see their work being, you know, having ads slapped on it, that won't they like take issue with that? And of course, this was long before the days of things like Facebook and Quora and all these content sites that shamelessly put ads everywhere. There was a lot of, a lot of websites that were paid for with ads, but user generated content paid for by ads was kind of edgy. So I was worried, and he said, okay, if it really, you know, gets down to that, then we'll convert it into a nonprofit, and, you know, we'll just draw a nice big sinecure out of this. This is essentially what he told me. And I said, okay, well, one way or another, I think it sounds like it could be worthwhile. So that's basically how it was going to go. I think the way that Jimmy Wales portrayed it to me was, this enterprise is, you know, just something to benefit the world. And we, of course, will benefit alongside it, but from actually making it. But it's going to benefit the world. And so that was the selling point. There's also the selling point that it was easy to make to the volunteers.
So what was the initial philosophy of Wikipedia, you know, in terms of becoming this encyclopedia and not being biased in the content.
Well, that was certainly part of it. There were a lot of different elements of the philosophy, the principles that we started it on. I mean, maybe the first principle was it's open source, or the open content version of that called open content, which means anybody could contribute to it. Anyone could swipe a copy, except it's not swiping. It's almost in the public domain, not quite. The people who originally wrote the articles retain copyright, but they've also given the world the right to reuse the stuff under certain very, very limited conditions. So it's being generous with our work and encouraging everyone to be generous together, kickstarting the gift economy in the context of an encyclopedia. So that was a big principle. Another one was openness. So in the same way that open source software is open to anybody who is very capable and, you know, willing to work with others and so forth in an open source system, hey, you can come and work on an encyclopedia with us, and we will, you know, we won't have anything against you. So we initially, we were all about like having the left and the right working together, people from all different countries, all different religions, all different points of view working together. And then the idea, third, is how do you get all of those people and working together in a really open system? Answer, you adopt a neutrality policy, a non-bias policy, as I call it in the preceding Newpedia project. Then Wikipedia was built on top of Newpedia. And there it became called NPOV, the neutral point of view policy, or as I say, just the neutrality policy. That says basically that rather than the article authors trying to declare what is the truth or most likely to be true on the subject according to the experts or whatever, instead of that, we actually try to represent a wide cross-section of opinion, of course, opinion that is endorsed by different competing experts. So this, and it's important, right? Because the experts do disagree with each other, and it's we do the world a disservice by pretending that that they don't. And there are really, really important ideological, religious, and other differences that people have. And we do the world a disservice if we pretend that those differences don't exist, and we basically make up people's minds for them. So that was another big important principle that we started Wikipedia on. But there were actually quite a few others.
You know, it's really interesting to me. It's that because the internet has sort of evolved. I like your original sort of viewpoint of, hey, let's have all the opinions of all the folks and let's let people make their own decision. And now the world has seemed that it's become very vanilla. And it's like, you must believe this way or no way. And or we're going to cancel you. And it's just weird how the world has sort of evolved. Now, how did you guys originally, when you were creating this, is like fact check? Like, it's just people are fact checked, because right now, you know, the president of the United States is getting fact checked and getting censored and stuff. And so, like, when you guys were early on in Wikipedia, you guys were sort of pioneering the space of, here's what we think is the truth, but who is the arbiter of that truth that says, okay, we've determined this is the truth?
Well, again, we did not declare one particular truth on any controversial opinion. So we weren't fact-checking in that sense. The whole modern notion of fact-checking is absurd to me. The notion that people can pick the winners and losers when there are serious controversial opinions. Sometimes there are definite facts and people make mistakes or they lie and it can be proven. I'm not denying that. And actually, those sorts of things usually did come out in the wash in discussions in Wikipedia. But for the most part, what the way it worked was we would just hash things out on the talk page. And the talk page is a page that each article had its own page for discussion of the content of the article. And I mean, of course, there were people who fought a lot, practically from the beginning. It didn't really get to be bad, though, I would say, until about 6 or 9 months in. And then
that quickly, that didn't take long.
Yeah, well, I suppose so. Right. That there was in the earliest days, we were dominated by people who came over from Newpedia. And we started with a bang. There were actually a lot of people involved with Wikipedia right from the beginning, like dozens, because we had already built the community through Newpedia. That's why Wikipedia got such a great start. But then we started getting invaded, essentially, by waves of people from Corrosion, which is a now defunct technology group blog, and Slashdot, especially Slashdot. And Slashdot is dominated by basically the libertarian left. It was, probably still is. Those people, well, let's just say there were a lot of anarchists there. There were a lot of people on I recognize now, just due to the sort of habits that I've come to detect, you know, in the intervening years, they were basically the 2001 version of social justice warriors. They were very difficult to work with. Let's just put it that way. And eventually they took over. But as I say, in the very first months, you know, even as far as the first 9 months, it was actually relatively easy to work together. And the whole notion that we could reach some consensus actually made some sense. But as soon as there were enough people involved, and it didn't matter what the politics were of it were, frankly, when there were enough people involved, the whole notion of decision-making by consensus went out the window. That's actually one of the big mistakes that we made. And it's a mistake that Wikipedia still has not solved, has not fixed.
What was the last straw for you? When did that happen, and what made you finally throw up in your hands and say, I'm out?
So I left in two different stages. First, they lost the ability to pay me. So Wikipedia was started just as the .com boom was turning to bust. So over the course of that first year in 2001, the market for ads collapsed. And by the end of 2001, they had lost a big contract. The Bomas had lost a big contract. So they had to get rid of all of the early hires, about half a dozen of us. And I was the last one to be let go, but they basically couldn't afford to pay me. Basically they stopped paying me in February, and then I quit at the beginning of March because I didn't want to work as a volunteer, you know, not under any. I actually thought it'd be difficult to maintain any sort of authority in the system if I actually weren't a paid employee. It had already become difficult. So by the end of 2002, so the year after Wikipedia got started, the project had been well and truly invaded, not entirely, right, but enough by various bad actors on the left that they had frankly driven off a lot of decent people, and these were not conservative people who were driven off. They're just regular academics, probably fellow leftists, but they couldn't work with these people who were basically made life difficult. Among the things they would do is they'd write nonsense articles that just represent their own idiosyncratic point of view, and then defend them at length against all comers, and ignore policy. Another thing they would do is write articles that are really blatantly biased, like as biased as they are today. But we wouldn't put up with that back then. I mean, we would argue with people, and basically those people were not being kicked out, right? They were being allowed to stick around, and they were just a growing problem that was festering. And on top of that, because there was no special role for experts in the system at all, the special role was actually Newpedia. Newpedia was actually supposed to work with Wikipedia alongside it, but didn't end up working that way. So experts had no role at all in the system. They just had to work side by side, shoulder to shoulder, with a bunch of anonymous, in some cases, dimwits. And of course, that's going to drive them out, and it did. So at the end of 2001, the beginning of 2000, sorry, end of 2002, the beginning of 2003, I actually made an ultimatum to Jimmy Wales. I said, look, you do something about these difficult people who have overrun the project, that are driving out the good people. And you also throw the experts a bone of some sort, give them some sort of low-key role in the system, approving certain versions of articles or whatever, give them a group to work with. I won't leave. But if you don't, I'm going to have to leave, because I just can't approve of what's going on anymore. And Jimmy Wales, I think he liked that idea of me completely leaving, because it seemed to be very easy for him to say, okay, yeah, I don't really see a problem. I don't see the problems that you're identifying in the project. So I left. And I've never regretted leaving.
Mm. Well, this is one of those things, and I think that's maybe it's a tie-in to, you know, when you were over at Everipedia. It's like throwing those experts a bone. Let the experts earn some crypto for their time and their knowledge, and maybe let them, you know, have some I don't know if it's like fact checking, but just anti-bias, you know, checking in there, because it's like. Or if you're biased, there at least needs to, you at least need to know that it's biased.
How about right? Just honesty? That's all. Just honesty. I mean, that is a virtue that we should aspire to. And I think when people are trying to put out an agenda, they're not being honest.
Yeah. So, you guys have thrown out a lot of things there. Just to give background for people who don't know this, I was the CIO of Everipedia, the blockchain encyclopedia. Doesn't mean it's an encyclopedia about blockchain. It's an encyclopedia that is actually is captured on the blockchain, and you can actually earn coins by writing articles and editing articles. So it's the encyclopedia of everything. So it has more articles than Wikipedia does, because it's copied all of Wikipedia's articles and added to those a whole bunch of other articles about mostly pop culture topics of concerning people who are and memes that are internet famous mostly. There's a lot to say there. I mean, where do you really want me to begin?
Say now? What you want to say.
Okay. Well, I'll say this. When I joined Everipedia, I told them what I really want to work on is a project where we sort of bring all the encyclopedias together in a database that would essentially link to them all, make them easy to search from one place, but not just a meta search engine, something that would give the public the means of rating the articles, but again, in a way that's totally decentralized. I actually had told them about this idea. I told the Everpedia guys not long after they started Everpedia back in 2015, I think it was. They tried to recruit me, and I didn't want to get involved. In 2017, Sam Kasmian said, so we're thinking of moving Everpedia, which wasn't a blockchain project to begin with, we're thinking of moving it to the blockchain. And I said, well, that sounds very interesting. Why would you do that? And then he explained, well, this actually is how we might be able to implement your idea. And I said, that sounds very cool. So I spent a couple, almost 2 years, mostly giving speeches, evangelizing the whole idea of a decentralized encyclopedia project. Everpedia was just going to be what we need to do in order to get the system set up and running. And then we would add the ability of other encyclopedias to work within the same system. Well, it turns out, without getting into too much detail, because I could easily get into the weeds here, it turns out that another thing that we talked about in the beginning, it was clearer and clearer that it was going to be necessary. There needed to be essentially a nonprofit that would hold the standards, the internet communication standards that would be used by the different encyclopedias to communicate among each other. So they're basically in the same way that there is RSS and Atom that are the standards that sort of define the blogosphere. So there would need to be some standards that would define this encyclopedia network. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought this really can't be Everpedia, because Everpedia is competing directly with these other encyclopedias. So In the end, I said, you know, I really, my heart is in the project of making a truly decentralized encyclopedia network, not just an encyclopedia that happens to be run on the blockchain, but a decentralized, genuinely decentralized encyclopedia network. In fact, it doesn't have to be on the blockchain at all. Probably the content is going to be on BitTorrent. And in the end, obviously, there's all kinds of things there that can be represented on and ported to blockchains, like Everpedia's, for sure. And Everpedia is actually interested in being one of the first front ends, so to speak, of the new network of encyclopedias. So the network of encyclopedias, I'm calling the encyclosphere. So just like the blogosphere, but it concerns encyclopedias, so it's going to be the encyclosphere. And I have started a nonprofit. I started it officially last fall. We got our first $100,000 donation, I'm happy to say. So that's given me some time to actually get my ducks in a row, and the website should be launched by the time this appears. I sure hope it is. The website is encyclosphere.org. The The nonprofit is called the Knowledge Standards Foundation. So the home of the Knowledge Standards Foundation is encyclosphere.org. Now, encyclosphere.org is not an encyclopedia. It will never be an encyclopedia. We will not run an encyclopedia. We won't have an app or anything like it. All we're doing is organizing the standards, organizing the people who will build all the different components of what is truly a decentralized network, something that has no center, no leader at all, unlike most blockchain projects, by the way, really decentralized, not just in name. And so that's what I really want to do. So,
I got to ask this because, you know, those who win the wars write the history books, right? That's a thing. Like win the war, then the history kind of changes a little bit based on their narratives. And so how is Encyclosphere going to, and the knowledge standard actually, you know, be beholden to the truth? Is there mechanisms built into this that says, hey, this is the truth, and or you can dispute the truth, or, you know, is it, how are you going to approach that? Because there's so many narratives out there that, right, you know, you don't even know what the real truth is anymore.
Right. Excellent question. The answer is we're going to have multiple articles on the same topic competing with each other, and the ability to rate the articles again in a way that is totally decentralized. So there won't even be one canonical database of the ratings or of the articles. It will be like the blogosphere in that respect. There's lots of different blog aggregators, right? Lots and lots of them, actually. In the same way, we expect there to be plenty of different encyclosphere or encyclopedia aggregators bringing the content, or at least the metadata about articles and people's ratings about them together. And how they are run individually, well, that's sort of up to them. We're just creating the infrastructure for the thing to exist. All of those difficult questions about editorial policy, those are not questions that we want to be concerned with at all. We want to be neutral with regard to editorial policy or with regard to the truth. We want to basically leave that open to the people who are making the apps and who are rating articles. One exciting idea is that once there is a sort of rating service available, is, you know, you could actually have whitelists of raters, like the American Medical Association, for example, could publish its whitelist of the identities of doctors. And then those people working totally independently of each other can just go and rate different articles about medical topics in their specialties. And then other people can aggregate all of those different ratings. And all they need is the whitelist and the articles. And then they can actually declare which is the leading article according to AMA certified and AMA identified people. But then, of course, you know, it doesn't have to be an establishment source. There's all kinds of alternative ways of slicing and dicing rating data that will be out there. But that's the beauty of true decentralization.
I have to laugh when I look at my Wikipedia page. I've had one for years, and I know people have tried to, you know, update and correct some things on it, but I feel like that there are, you know, the people that are editors are people who couldn't do anything else with their lives and sitting in their basements and feeling ultimate power and control to edit. I'm just in the beginning here. It says Com began his career as a radio personality. That's true. Where he played music and was a weatherman. Probably as a DJ, I said a couple times, hey, it's sunny out, you know, but I was never.
This is not true. You show me your sunset all the time and say, this is the weather.
Yeah, look,
there's weather. If you live in Kansas City.
there's weather outside. I mean, just that. And then, you know, that it's like somebody tried to update. I'd seen, you know, I got a little notification. They tried to put my new books on there and somebody removed my new books. They tried to put that I was the co-host of a popular crypto podcast on there. And then somebody came in and removed that. And it's just, it's honest. Let's play a game here, Larry.
Yeah.
On a scale of one being utter trash to 10 being completely factually reliable, I'm going to say a few different sites or niches. And with all bias of yours put aside, on a scale of 1 to 10, where is Wikipedia on the reliability scale?
I don't know, maybe 3.
Wow. I was expecting maybe a 5. All right, let's do a couple more. Mainstream media.
I really don't want to do this game. uncomfortable. I mean, it's fun, but
you're making it unfun. You know,
I do a lot of these things. Wikipedia, I've thought a lot about, so I didn't feel too bad about doing that. But yeah, Wikipedia has some a lot of factual information. Even still, it continues to be useful, even still on some topics.
But how do you trust it? If you're saying it's a 3, that means
even. But you have to limit yourself to the strictly factual topics, and even there, you have to wonder what effect is the total politicization of media. And that includes Wikipedia now. What effect has that had even on the portrayal of what you might think are you know, just basic factual information? Like, I cannot tell you why. Let me give you an idea about why I think your article in particular has been so difficult to edit. In short, Wikipedia has been taken over by a mob, practically a criminal mob, like a mafia, operating behind the scenes anonymously. Now, I'm not saying that it's one. It isn't. For sure, it's not just one organization. But there's a lot of competing pressure groups that are more or less cooperating on the edges, depending on where their bailiwicks are. Some of them are spies. Of course they would be. This is one of the most popular websites on the internet. Some of them are corporate shills. I mean, of course they are. This is like they get paid the big bucks to shape the public opinion about billion-dollar industries. So, of course, corporate shills are there, and they are among the people with those Wikipedia-powerful accounts, of course. And then there's government shills, political shills, and ideological players who are trying to shape public opinion to make sure that people... Anyway, you actually have to be playing one of those sorts of games in order to do anything on Wikipedia, and you have to do it successfully. That's what I think is going on. It's hard to prove, but how could it not work that way? Because this is how the world operates everywhere else. And we know, it's obvious, we know, of course, for a fact that Wikipedia is run by anonymous people. There are some people whose identities are known, but even there, you know, even if their identities are known, they don't have any personal culpability for any sort of responsibility for this. There's just a corporate responsibility, which has sort of diffused the actual legal entity, the MediaWiki Foundation, doesn't actually bear legal responsibility for most of the content of Wikipedia most of the time. They are the legal owners of the website, sure. Theoretically, it's possible to sue them and so forth. But for the most part, they're covered by Section 230, aren't they? And that gives those anonymous groups a great deal of power. This is how it's worked for a long time. So I think that's why, Joel, it's so hard for you to get your article edited, because you're not paying the right people, man. You got to get out there and just open up your wallet, I guess, and pay off the right people.
Yeah, I'm not paying somebody to, you know, put me in. It honestly, it's inconsequential, right? Yeah, it doesn't really matter for a lot of people.
I haven't read my article at all.
Yeah, having a Wikipedia page, you know, some see it as a status symbol, but it's as meaningful as having a verified check mark on Twitter. It doesn't really mean anything. I just want it to be accurate. If you're going to say stuff about me, I'm not a freaking weatherman.
Yeah, but you're the definitive source on Joel.com, so you should be able to somehow be able to input thoughts about Joel.com, I would say.
But you can't if you try to, and a long time ago I did that, and it says, person appears to be connected to the source. So, yeah, because I know, because it's me.
Yeah, because I wasn't a damn weatherman.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. So let me ask this. So this was actually one of the things that Joel and I were thinking about whenever we first started doing this show. This group reached out to us about this project called Deep Sea. And the idea was to do a deep sea into every piece of content. Like, as Reddit, you know, stuff comes through on Reddit and you're like, wait a second, who is this author? Who is this author beholden to? Who is paying this author? Like, why are they mentioning, do they mention certain products or brands or certain things in their content, like over time, to just sort of understand the bias that the author or the publication might have? Does this lean to the left? Does it lean to the right? Is it more moderate? Who are they beholden to? Give them a bias score. That way we can know what we're dealing with. And that was going to be the idea. And then the CEO decided he wanted to create a decentralized YouTube instead. And it was just kind of flaky. But that was one of the things that made us go, wow, this would be so good, not only for encyclopedia articles, but for, you know, actual, you know, bias checking or fact checking in some ways, not to say this is the version of the truth or this is the real truth, but allowing people to become better at critical thinking and doing their own research, or at least how to think about things. Because a lot of times the real truth doesn't actually make it to people through their filter bubble anymore, right? And they're so insulated from everything that they don't even understand what's really going on in some cases, because their filter bubble is so tightly wound by big tech and by big media. And so is this kind of, when you're thinking about the encyclosphere, is this kind of something that might solve some of that?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, I guess you could think of this as an implementation of that idea. My notion is that there would be plugins for MediaWiki and for WordPress. So you'd be able to start your own wiki, you'd be able to start your own blog, and make them into another part of the encyclosphere. It would be its own encyclopedia, or maybe it's just a few articles that you put out there. You press a button on the WordPress plugin and it publishes the article to the encyclosphere. And then it joins to begin with anyway, undifferentiated mass of encyclopedia articles. And then it's up to a bunch of different competing apps, like news readers or blog readers, but encyclopedia readers, to decide which is the best, or to give the users the ability to determine which is the best. So yeah, this actually is a way to break through different filter bubbles. I mean, I could imagine seeing different competing articles written about the 2020 presidential election, one written by Trump supporters, one written by establishment Republicans, and one written by Democrats. And it would be very interesting to compare those three articles, or better yet, the topic is the same, whoever writes the article, but you have different groups of people identified in different people. Mm. So you have the Trump supporters, then you have the Republican non-Trump supporters, and then you have Democrats. Those would be three tags that raters could use to rate not to rate themselves, but to categorize themselves. And then you could basically say, with the data, as long as there were enough people who are rating the articles, you could do a search using one of these encyclopedia readers. You could ask the system, what was the top rated article on the 2020 presidential election according to Trump supporters? And the best article would actually have to, you know, be better rated than all of the other competitors. And that will probably be very different from the top rated article, according to Democrats.
Well, that would be great for critical thinkers, right? Just to do your own research. And I think the only flaw in that potentially
are the articles.
Yeah. The only flaw in that potentially is that sort of, you know, where somebody goes, oh, I am a Trump supporter and I'm going to write this about this, right? And they fake their persona. There's a lot of fake personas going on. There's a lot of fake Republicans that are actually Democrats and likewise. So how do you solve that?
So I agree. So in any such system like this, there's going to be an incredible incentive to game the system. And that's become almost a sport. It's like one of the first things that hackers try to do when anything reasonably interesting comes down the pike.
Isn't this why we should have verified profiles, though? We don't know who's editing Wikipedia. They hide behind anonymous names, you know, on Twitter, anonymous sources, you know, so much of the time. At least when there's a name behind it, you know who's saying it, you can see where they're coming from and determine, is this being unbiased or are they just giving their, you know, opinion?
Yeah. So the network definitely has to have as a component an identity system. Right. So you wouldn't have to reveal your identity in order to have an article or even to make some ratings. But it's going to be harder to get people to listen to you if you don't. Mm-hmm. So the idea is we can certainly have articles written by anonymous people as much as you like. And maybe some of them will filter up. But if you are required to reveal your real identity, then all kinds of new interesting things become possible. You can come up with new algorithms to identify who the real people are, first of all. You can come up with algorithms to determine who is actually giving his own opinion as opposed to just spoofing someone, acting, you know, LARPing, for example. I think that's what LARPing is, definitely one of the ways in which political operatives like to play, and probably information warfare involves a fair bit of LARPing these days. So whatever system we come up with is going to have to avoid that. And it seems to me that the way around that is to come up with some sort of effective whitelisting technology. Right. So basically it becomes, we have to make it possible for people to declare that in the opinion of some organization, this list of accounts can be trusted as being who.
Well, how do we know that organization can be trusted? Because, you know, in academia, there's a lot of.
Well, has to start somewhere, right?
It's true. You know? Yeah.
It always falls apart, though. And this is, I mean, when you look at who we are trusting, think of how many people still think that Wikipedia is a legitimate source of knowledge on so many of the things that they go and look for. Think how many people think that Facebook fact checkers are actual fact checkers, or that PolitiFact is not horribly biased, or that
people
Snopes.
Go to Snopes all the time. Yes, yeah, Snopes. Good Lord,
Snopes. I mean, would you trust Snopes, Larry?
No. They're bad. They're actually quite bad at what they do.
It's the National Enquirer of fact checking,
and especially on political topics. Yeah, it's not real fact checking. Absolutely.
But people who don't think for themselves, they go to Snopes, they read it, and they go, that's debunked because Snopes said so. How do we develop more critical thinking amongst the population?
Well, it's hard. As somebody who has taught critical thinking at the college level, like most philosophy grad students end up having to do, it's not people's favorite class to take, and they don't always do the best in the class. And those are college students. It's a hard problem for sure. It starts with education, right? Yeah. But of course we've been dumbed down, I think probably deliberately to some degree. Maybe not because people value ignorance and they value the inability to think critically. Maybe they do want that, but it's more they value fairness and the systems that they come up with in order to ensure fairness ultimately mean that people are going to end up getting a bad education and they're not going to learn how to think truly critically and so forth. So there's a lot of a lot to be said on that.
Yeah, let me ask that again then. What do you think would be a definitive source if folks are out there going, wow, maybe I don't think critically enough? What are some resources? I mean, aside from Encyclosphere, which I think if that thing gets built out and you can see varying viewpoints, that's going to be a helpful thing. So since you taught this in the universities, like, what are a couple of sources that you might suggest people educate themselves on around critical thinking?
Just to educate themselves about critical thinking.
Yeah, to become a better critical thinker.
I'll just take your question at face value. I mean, yeah, take a college course about critical thinking. It's a kind of college course.
Read a book.
You can read about it. There's a lot of good books about critical thinking. I've got a half a shelf full of them down there, actually. It's not easy. It's like any area of knowledge. A lot of it comes naturally, right? A lot of it is just sort of like built into learning other subjects, right? So even if you've never had a class in critical thinking, but you've had a good general education in the liberal arts and sciences, then you probably will be pretty good at critical thinking. It's impossible to learn critical thinking without actually learning content. I mean, people try to teach that in logic classes taught by philosophy departments. But even those examples in those classes draw on common information. And if you can't make sense of that sort of background knowledge that most college students would have by that time, then you won't be able to make sense of the class. You can read a book. Yeah, you can take a course. If you're just asking for a quick and easy resource, that's kind of like saying, I want to know more about the Bible, or I want to know more about the Constitution, or I want to know more about physics. What's a good place for me to go and learn about it? Well, okay, you probably have to read the whole thing first, and then you're going to really have to study it, and you probably read a few books or something and, take a few courses on it, and then maybe you'd start to know more. Or better yet, since what we're talking about is critical thinking, the real answer is education in general, liberal arts education. Not progressive education, liberal arts education.
Mm. You know, I did pick up a great book recently that I'll put a plug in here because I think I find it phenomenal. It's called Better Decisions, Fewer Regrets by Andy Stanley. And I think that might be a good thing to listen to, because I think a lot of folks, you know, their decision-making process isn't all that great, right? And so they, a lot of times people, they don't even think about certain things. They just take things at face value and don't even really ask questions. And so maybe to be a critical thinker, you need to ask better questions.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and that's one of the things that is taught in philosophy. Just studying some philosophy will help with that.
Mm-hmm.
Figuring out how to ask good questions. Here's something. I had three and a half years of debate and speech. When I was in high school.
Yeah, that's great.
That helped a lot, actually. That was a great introduction to critical thinking.
Especially when you have to debate on the other side you don't agree with.
Yeah, you have to be able to debate both sides. And if you can't debate both sides of an issue adequately, you don't understand it. And if you're not inclined to, if you're just disinclined to fairly representing the other side, then chances are you don't really care that much about critical thinking. You're just mostly care about winning.
And that's been a philosophy of mine, is I don't have to be right. I just want to be correct, right? I'm willing to lose the argument. I just want to make sure that what it is I'm believing and saying is accurate.
Yeah. Right. No, I agree.
Whatever the cost is. And for the majority of us being human beings and our pride getting in the way, discovering that we were wrong, horribly, tragically wrong about something that has been near and dear to our hearts is devastating. It can shake us to the very core. You know, that's when we talk about people being red-pilled and waking up. You know, we've seen a lot of people recently have their eyes open. I've got one person very, very close to me who has had their eyes open just from doing their own research and thinking for themselves. And the world looks completely different to them now. Yeah. And it's future shock, and it does shake people to the core.
Yeah. Right. No, I agree.
And it's that coming out of the matrix feeling. It's like, whoa, reality isn't what I thought it was. I've been deceived. I've been bamboozled.
Yeah. And there's more than one matrix, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Quite aside from all issues of the deep state and whatever you think might be
involved. That doesn't exist, Larry. PolitiFact told me it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I know.
CNN told me it doesn't exist too.
Yeah.
And they told me I can't think for myself. So I'm just going to believe them.
I had the same sort of disorienting experience when I was 16, 17, 18. I decided that the most important thing in life was to know the truth. So I had observed mostly friends of my older siblings get into serious trouble. So I was like learning from their mistakes. And I had talked to them. I'd sort of like sat in the background as my siblings were talking to their friends and all kinds of the nonsense that they believed. And I came to the conclusion that they made the bad decisions that they did that got them into serious trouble because they believed all kinds of false things. And then more I thought about that principle in general, the more I thought, you know what, that if that's true, that means that it's really important to know the truth about the deepest things in life. And soon enough, I learned that meant philosophy. And that's actually what turned me on to philosophy. But there came a time when I went through a system of radical doubt, as Descartes scholars call it, doing the same sort of doubting of everything that Descartes said he did, I did it when I was a teenager, and that totally disoriented me for sure. It's like I wasn't religious. I didn't have a political point of view. I didn't know what to think about morality or anything. And I just sort of built back up my set of beliefs over the years. And for what it's worth, here I am.
Here you are indeed. Well, this has been a great conversation, Larry. We appreciate it. And we encourage those of you out there to check out Larry's site at larrysanger.org. And then the encyclosphere.org, and links to both of these in the show notes for this episode. And we'll look forward to welcoming you back again, Larry, and talk about how the encyclosphere is sphering.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget, I have a new book. Yes, it's called Essays on Free Knowledge, The Origins of Wikipedia and the New Politics of Knowledge. And the back of the book copy is, "The digital revolution was corrupted. We were naive and we paid for it. What began as a celebration of freedom has become a controlling machine. What began as a dream of enlightenment has become a nightmare of indoctrination and anti-intellectualism." So these are 12 essays that defend the ideals of the digital revolution while rejecting the disastrous naivete that would have us ignore subversion by bad actors and blithely abandon autonomy and wisdom and blindly trust unaccountable giant corporations. So it's on Amazon. You can find an ebook on Gumroad, if you're familiar with Gumroad.
Essays on free knowledge. Great. Well, we got a lot of thinkers out there. You guys want to go down some rabbit holes? Larry is a great thinker. By the way, I did not mention that he has a PhD in philosophy. He is a doctor of the philosophical. So fantastic to learn from.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Dr. Sanger. You know, he's got a food in philosophy.
He does?
PhD.
Oh, a PhD. I was like, a food.
A food.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that how smart people say it? Yeah,
I think so.
I got a food.
The really, really smart people. But you know what? He posed a lot of interesting questions and a lot of interesting concerns that were very interesting and super interesting. And I was interested while I was listening to the interestingness.
I think we should have said at the beginning, every time Travis says interesting, that you need to drink. You guys would be sloshed by halfway through the show.
Interesting.
Well, Sir Lord Travis, why don't you tell our listeners about the very interesting anytask.com?
Oh, this is interesting. Electronium. You guys have heard about that, the ETN token. They did an ICO back in 2017. That was very interesting. And they have gained widespread adoption since then, providing a mobile-first payment solution to the world's unbanked. And they got over 4 million users worldwide that are using this thing. And what's cool about it with the ETN token is that you can actually you can top up your phone in over 40 countries with minutes, right? In America and in the UK and Australia, you have a cell phone plan. But in a lot of these other countries, you just top up minutes. So whenever you need new minutes, you got to go in, you got to pop it up. Well, you can do that with ETN. And also in 4 other countries, you can top up your electricity for your home and pay for that with ETN. So that's pretty cool. And since then, they've launched a freelance marketplace called AnyTask. And there are thousands of freelancers around the world that are ready to do things for you. And they earn ETN. You pay them in dollars. They get ETN. They're able to use ETN to update their phone, top it up, and top up their electricity. Really cool. Helping out the world. And lots of tasks out there starting at $1. You can go check it out. AnyTask.com. We get NFTs created there sometimes, and you can get things created there as well.
And we appreciate having them as a sponsor for the show and providing value and quality. Sir Lord Travis, Bitcoin has seen some really interesting highs. I know we've hit 42,000 or so. Right now, it's sitting at about 38,500. Ethereum had passed 1300, currently timestamp 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time on the 10th of January, sitting around 1300, just under 1300 right now.
Hey, before we go, I want to give a shout out to Lattice.exchange. You should go check it out. It's another decentralized exchange you guys might want to check out.
Lattice, do it. And Lattice, thank all of you for joining us for this episode of the Bad Crypto Podcast. More news coming your way on the Thursday show, a live Nifty show on Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 2 o'clock Pacific, where we cover the latest in NFTs and the future of digital collectibles. And then every Sunday night, you'll find a Bad Crypto episode as well. Please tell a friend, tell them that we are not fake news, and tell them to stay bad.
Who's bad?
The Bad Crypto Podcast is a production of Bad Crypto LLC. The content of the show, the videos, and the website is provided for educational, informational, and entertainment purposes only. It's not intended to be and does not constitute financial, investment, or trading advice of any kind. You shouldn't make any decisions as to finances, investing, trading, or anything else based on this information without undertaking independent due diligence and consultation with a professional financial advisor. Please understand that the trading of Bitcoins and alternative cryptocurrencies have potential risks involved. Anyone wishing to invest in any of the currencies or tokens mentioned on this podcast should first seek their own independent professional financial advisor.
Tell them, damn it. Tell a friend on the telephone.
Telephonically. Hypersonically. Kind of chronically.
Grease lightning.